Unfortunately, the union did a media push after my contract was terminated without cause, and it hurt the Google search of my name and my hireability in other places. And so my side of the story needs to be heard.
This is Code 3, the Firefighters Podcast, hosted by award-winning journalist Scott Orr. Now, here's Scott.
That's right, and I will not let Parkinson stop me. Thank you for joining me again for the return of Code 3. You are listening to the show for and about firefighters. Give me about 20 minutes and I'll give you a firefighting topic to think about. None of the BS, just stuff that matters. Now let's get started. This edition of Code 3 is a little different than most. It's about a fire chief who lost his job after he incurred the wrath of the union locals officials and ultimately the IAFF. Scott Freitag was the chief of the Central Arizona Fire and Medical Authority, or CAFMA. The agency was created under Scott's leadership when two fire districts combined under a JMA to form CAFMA in 2015. CAFMA covers 365 square miles of territory of Yavapai County, Arizona, and it serves about 100,000 residents from 12 stations. One day in August 2024, a press release showed up in email boxes saying that the IAFF had censured Scott Freitag by a vote of 2,520-0. I was pretty startled to hear this news because I know Scott to be an honest, decent fire chief who was genuinely concerned about the welfare of his firefighters. As you'll hear, the no-confidence vote led to Scott's firing after 11 years as a chief in September 2024. How all this went down depends on whose story you believe. It may well have had little to do with firefighting and much more to do with politics and a health plan. And Scott joins me now to tell that story. Thanks for being back on Code 3.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you? You're in the private sector now.
I am in the private sector. Just a new path for me. Completely different after 31 years in emergency services, but you know, you pick yourself up and you find your way.
Well, I got to ask you, did this all happen as quickly as it seemed like? To me, it seemed like it happened overnight.
It did. I left for Harvard for a three-week program in June 1 of 2024. And everything started to unfold while I was there in June. And then on September 23rd, my contract was canceled without cause.
Were you blindsided by the IAFF vote?
I was completely. I had no idea that was going to happen. I was blindsided by that. I was also blindsided by the PFFA, the Professional Firefighters of Arizona, at their conference in Tucson. I didn't know this, but the union president for the state at the time, Donna Youngward, got up on stage and told the audience that Chief Freitag had gone rogue and that they were going to run me out of the state.
So did you really call the PFFA a criminal organization?
No, I never called them a criminal organization at all. Not once. They did accuse me of it. What they're talking about with the insurance issue is that we found out on May 15th of 2024 that an agent that is a third-party agent for the Firefighter Healthcare Trust had illegally accessed the Kairos healthcare pool that CAFMA was part of. And from November of 23 through March of 24, they had this person's digital fingerprints and they're taking the claims data for 14,000 individuals. That's what the federal complaint that's been filed says. And that was filed by Kairos against this agent. That agent had been the agent for the Kairos pool, as well as the Firefighter Healthcare Trust. Kairos had cut ties with that agent in October, November of 23, but whoever did it forgot to pull that person's credentials into the system. And that person continued, according to what I've been told, continued to use those credentials. And now there's a federal investigation into the HIPAA violations.
What about the allegation that you wouldn't discuss health insurance coverage during negotiations with the union local? Is that true?
Um, it, That's a yes and no answer, because they brought to us the firefighter healthcare trust. And at the time, I had just had to let our administrative chief go. I had to fire him for issues. The administrative chief was the person who reviewed insurance and handled most of our insurance. And at the time, with him gone, we had a huge hole, a gap, and we just didn't have the personnel that we needed to do a true RFP, request for proposal, for insurance. And at the time, and still today, we had really good insurance and nobody was complaining about it. So what I said was, hey, can you just give us until the next fiscal year? Let us get through this one and kind of recover. We were short in human resources. We didn't have an administrative chief. We were trying to hire firefighters. We were preparing for our certificate of necessity hearing in the Valley. And we just didn't have the bandwidth to take on a full RFP, because we can't, as a tax-supported entity, we can't just say, oh, we're going to go with this insurance. We have to do a competitive process and look at everything and invite other people to bid on the business as well. So I said, we can absolutely take a look at it, but just give it until we get through this fiscal cycle, and then we can put it on the table and do a full comparison.
How was their reaction to you saying that?
Initially, the union president up here kept pushing. But what people don't know is that the state union president at the time is the person who was instrumental in starting that firefighter healthcare trust. And about the time that they started really pushing fire districts to sign on, prior to that, Tempe Fire and Mesa Fire were the two big players in the firefighter healthcare trust. Well, I think it was October of 23, Mesa Fire had pulled out of that trust and went back to the city of Mesa Insurance or whatever piece they had. And it was subsequent to Mesa's pulling out that there was this sudden push to get these fire districts into the plan. In the industry, I had heard rumor that there were some financial concerns, not that I could confirm them. And the year prior, the Firefighter Healthcare Trust had refused to provide a quote to us. So my position was, listen, we're not in a position to review this right now. Just give it a year, and then we can sit down, talk about it, and do a full RFP. And, you know, if it's a better plan, great. At the same time, I was negotiating some additional cancer coverage under our current healthcare pool. So they were getting exceptional insurance. Right. All I asked for was a grace period. And again, that firefighter healthcare pool they wanted to go to just the year prior refused to even provide a quote to us.
Now, you brought up cancer, so as long as you bring it up, I'll move to that right now. What do you make of the complaint that you failed to implement cancer prevention procedures?
It's completely false accusation. In fact, I have it from sources inside the local 3066 that when the Professional Firefighters of Arizona came up to meet with the CAFMA union about what was happening, because most of it was pushed by the state union with the union president up here, someone asked them, why are you going after him for cancer? You know that's not true. And they said, yeah, we get that, but it raises the ire of the public. We had all the documentation to show that from 2016 forward, we had been laser focused on cancer preventative measures and addressing the concerns that have been brought up. The only station we hadn't addressed, and you may remember, Station 51 was owned by the city of Prescott, but it was staffed by CAFMA personnel.
Right, so that would not be your purview to deal with that.
Correct, we couldn't. And so in April of 24, I was able to negotiate a deal with the city where we swapped the two stations, the one they were staffing that we owned and the one that we were staffing that they owned. And we made a deal to purchase that and trade. And the deal was, listen, you can't touch anything in the station until July because we need time to move. I said, perfect. Let's just get the deal closed, get it done, because you know how politics can be. And then once July 1st hits, then we're off and running to make improvements to that station. And between July 1, when the deal was done with Prescott, and September, almost all of the cancer preventative measures that we could do were completed. The weight equipment was moved into the basement. A turnout gear room was completed. All of those things were done. Are there still things left to do? Yes. But if you look, you could go down to the city of Phoenix or just about any other fire department in the country, and they have not been able to implement every single cancer mitigation effort. We, in my opinion, and looking at our facilities and our assistant chief of planning logistics, Cody Rose, they had done outstanding work at implementing the cancer preventative measures. And one of the challenges was that with the turnout gear rooms, that became a point of contention, the firefighters were propping the doors open, so it was negating the negative pressure. So we kept having to tell them, stop blocking the doors open. We were implementing those things. And another point that's easily verifiable, if you look at the records, the minutes from the January 25 labor management meeting, when I was already gone from the agency, the union requested of staff that they set the clean cab concept aside so that the money could be used for raises and budget. The clean cab concept is an industry standard for cancer mitigation. And the union, after accusing me of not implementing mitigation or cancer mitigation standards, they asked that those be set aside because they said, well, the clean cab isn't really International Association of Firefighters driven initiative, so we're comfortable with not doing that. I don't understand how you justify claiming that the fire chief who was implementing the cancer mitigation standards, claiming he wasn't, and then as soon as he's gone, you go to the staff as the union and ask to stop moving forward with one of the cancer mitigation efforts.
Since you bring up budgeting, we'll talk about three-man rigs. You said correctly, I believe that most of the departments in the country are in this situation. They're not able to put four firefighters in every engine every shift. So what was behind this complaint?
Honestly, I don't know. We were working with the union and the board, and we had a plan, and we were starting to implement some four-person constant staffing engines, but it wasn't all of them. And the message I gave to the union was, listen, it's doubtful that we will ever get to where we have four-person constant staffing. Even Phoenix is struggling to keep four people on an engine at a constant staff level. But we're going to do the best we can, given the revenue limitations for fire districts. Well, then the union president said in a document that we had developed, he's like, I want... it was the new strategic plan, and he wanted us to put in there that we were trying to achieve the NFPA standard of four-person engine companies. And I said, we can't put that in there. It's disingenuous to put it in there when we know that we can't achieve that. The strategic plan is for a period of time. In that period of time, we're not going to be able to achieve four-person constant staffing on the engines, but we have described in here how we are moving in a direction to provide more four-person constant staffing engines. So again, that was a completely false accusation against me.
Did you authorize battalion chiefs to go to union meetings and then report back to you about who said negative things about you in them?
No. The battalion chiefs are part of the union, so I didn't authorize them to do anything. And I never really got feedback from any battalion chiefs regarding union meetings. The union meeting information that I received when they first brought up a vote of no confidence against me came from an outside source that was not a battalion chief who had attended the meeting. And the individual said, I've never seen people this angry. I have no idea what they're so angry about. They just kind of went off the rails. And I was like, I was at Harvard in Cambridge at the time. And I was like, what do you mean? What is going on? I don't understand what's happening. So no, I never never once sent battalion chiefs to board to union meetings, nor did I ask them or anyone else to report back to me. The phone call I got was unsolicited, and it wasn't a battalion chief.
Now, are you able to talk about the Kairos Health Arizona situation?
I can talk about what I know about
it. All right. What do you know about that, where they've asserted that you were involved in unethical dealings with it?
So Kairos had a leadership conference, the first one that they had tried to do, and they had people come in and speak just as guest speakers on leadership and things like that. I sat on a panel with two school superintendents, and I spoke. And that was it. There was no money exchange. There was no gifts. There was nothing. I just spoke at a conference. No different than when I would speak at Fire Rescue International, or I would speak at the Arizona Fire Chiefs Association Conference, or the Arizona Fire Districts Association Conference. This was just me speaking at a conference. There was nothing more to it than that.
Now, there is a general allegation, although I've not seen anything specific. You'd been bullying members of the department. Did they ever tell you what they felt was a bullying behavior?
They never told me what they felt was bullying behavior. It was never discussed with me. It was just an accusation last minute that they started putting out there, along with retaliation. Now, I know what they were complaining about, the retaliation. Their accusation was that I would pass people up for promotion because of their union activity, which is completely false and not supported by any of the records or any other witnesses. In fact, one of the people they said that I passed up for promotion during the investigation said, no, he didn't pass me up because of my union activity. He said I had some issues I had to deal with, and that's why he passed me over for promotion at that time. And each of the individuals that said, hey, he passed me over for promotion, and I know it was because of my union responsibilities. The one individual, that was years ago, he's since been promoted to captain. He showed up an hour late to the chief's interview. The only reason I granted him the opportunity to sit with us was because I wanted to get a baseline so I could give him some feedback on where he was. But you can't show up an hour late to a chief's interview and expect to get promoted. And he didn't do well in the interview, so afterwards we told him. But here's the other thing that needs to be pointed out. None of these people that we passed over for promotion, that wasn't an individual decision by me. Every chief's interview had myself, the operations chief, and one to two battalion chiefs that participated. And as a group, we would determine if someone was promotable or not. And if not, then we would go back to an individual, pull them aside, sit down, talk to them with their supervisor and their shift battalion chief. We would give them feedback and offer them assistance to help them get to where they needed to be to meet the standards to be in the position that they wanted to be in. And most of those individuals have all been promoted. And at the time they were complaining they were retaliated against, they had already been promoted.
So you've given pretty reasonable sounding answers to every issue that I've mentioned. That being the case, why do you think they wanted you out? And who actually wanted you out?
So I believe it was the state union and the union president up here that wanted me out. And I believe that there were a couple of reasons at play. One, there's a behavioral health company that's affiliated with the state union and with the Firefighter Healthcare Trust. They were acting as the employee assistance program through Kairos for CAFMA and other fire districts that were part of that plan. We contracted, CAFMA contracted, with a private entity up here for trauma counseling. Well, the company that was affiliated with the union, who was acting as the EAP, called that trauma counseling firm and told them that they needed to move 25% of CAFMA's personnel from EAP to the Craig Tiger Act, which is the presumptive law on mental behavioral health in the state, immediately. And when she said, I can't do that because I'm not seeing these people for work-related issues, she was told, if you don't do it, you will no longer be a provider for us. Now, the difference between the two is under EAP, insurance covers the cost of the sessions, which is about $120 an hour. under Craig Tiger, the presumptive, the agency covers the cost at a cost of up to $250 to $280 an hour. And so after this phone call, that company followed it up with an email in writing stating the exact same things. Then they started texting our personnel, and in some cases, their significant others by mistake, telling them that they were out of EAP sessions and that they needed to go into work, pick an incident, pick a date, give it to them, and they would then get them covered under Craig Tiger for 36 visits, which they can't do under state law. You don't get 36 visits up front. It's 12, and then it can be added to. But those text messages and screenshots, we had all of those things, which at the very least, in my opinion, is unethical, and at worst is fraud. So I turn all of that over to the attorney for CAFMA. And as I was in conversations with him, that behavioral health group sent a text to one of our peer captains and said, we're getting pushback from your admin. Can you get us access to your high stress incident logs? Which is highly unethical. And with that, I cut ties with that company. I told Kairos they will no longer be servicing anything for our people. Our attorney looked at all of the printed materials that we had and evidence. He felt that it appeared to be fraud. And so he turned that over to the state of Arizona, which very much upset the PFFA as well as that the owners of that company. At the same time, other fire districts found the exact same things happening within their agency. And so they cut ties with this other company as well. And so that company sent me a cease and desist saying, you have to stop talking bad about us. And you cost us Sedona's contract. You cost us City of Prescott's contract. I had nothing to do with those contracts. It wasn't me. It was behavior by that company that caused Sedona Fire District and the City of Prescott to look for other vendors to use. So that's one of them. The other one was I didn't sign on to the Firefighter Healthcare Trust, and it wasn't disclosed until late June, early July of 24, that the union president for CAFMA had been in possession of three separate quotes from the Firefighter Healthcare Trust since February of 24 that he didn't disclose to the agency or to anyone else internally. And those documents presumably were put together with information that was obtained illegally from the Kairos system, according to the federal complaint.
So do you have any desire to file a lawsuit in this case?
You know, I would love to file a lawsuit against them. Unfortunately, as the fire chief, I was considered a public official, so the bar is significantly higher. So you have to prove that they knowingly lied about you, slandered, and so forth. And while I can prove that, the reality is the state union and the union president for Local 3066, they have the backing of the International Association of Firefighters. So they have very deep pockets, a very large war chest, and a host of attorneys. My attorney said to me, listen, you have a case. We could win the case eventually. But what's going to happen is they're going to tie you up in court for years. And even when you win, then they're going to appeal and tie you up in court for even longer. And as an individual that doesn't have that large war chest, doesn't have a team of attorneys, it was that there wasn't a real return on investment that I would see in a reasonable amount of time, and would have bankrupted me. And so I was just in a position that I couldn't fight the much larger machine.
So having said all of that, is there anything you would have done differently that might have prevented this from happening?
You know, I've thought about that a lot. I was actually on a plane flying to St. Louis in November of 24, and I wrote at the top of a piece of paper, what did I do wrong? And nobody's perfect, by all means, but I would still have passed people up for promotion when they're not ready for promotion, because that's just what you have to do. And while it may upset people, that's what needs to be done to have a thriving organization for the future, to have the right leaders and people in the right seats. I could have not reported the fraud allegations against this behavioral health company that was affiliated with the IFF, but personally, integrity and ethics are high on my list of morals and values. And I felt that I have this evidence that shows these misdeeds. In my opinion, these misdeeds could hurt firefighters if they're going for a mental health retirement. And so I gave it to the attorney. And when I look back on it, I could have ignored it, but that's just not who I am. It had to be dealt with. And so I turned it over. And then with the Firefighter Healthcare Trust, you know, maybe we could add a conversation sooner. We just didn't have the bandwidth to do it. And all of that just led to the union at the state level, not even so much at the local level, but the state level, just being very angry. And the IFF never vetted anything despite their claims. They just listened to what the union said. Yes, this is a bad chief. He needs to go. The firefighters up here, they were upset because I wouldn't give them a 48-96 shift schedule because the evidence behind it shows there's an increase in cancer risk. There's an increase in mental and behavioral health issues. There's increased cost to the agency. You know, these are all things that exist. And I said, we're not going to do that. We're talking about mental and behavioral health and cancer. And you're asking me to move you to a schedule that increases the risk of those things. We can look at any other schedule, but not that one. And, you know, I could have changed my mind on that. But for 11 years I was here, I told them, if you want a 48-96 shift schedule, you need a different chief. And I guess with the state union's backing, they were able to irritate enough people that were angry about the 48-96 and whatever else they were mad about. And they were able to come after me. And again, I wouldn't change that. I still think that the 48-96 is a more dangerous schedule and that firefighters shouldn't be on it based on the science.
All right. One more question. It was mentioned to me at some point when there was discussion about how much money you spent on various things that, and I'm paraphrasing here, he built a podcast studio with money that could have been used for staff. How much did that studio cost?
The investment in the studio itself was around $1,000. And I think we had somewhere around 10,000 worth of equipment with cameras and audio mixing equipment.
And that came out of where?
It came out of the general fund through the IT department and facilities. The budget for CAFMA going into this fiscal year was $48 million.
Right. So 10,000 is a very minor part of that.
Oh, yeah. 10 to 15,000. And
so were there any complaints from staff made to you about that money spent?
No. The only thing I heard at one point, I had and this was the first time I heard it, I had the union president in to do a podcast with me. And he's like, wow, this is just your old office. He said, you know, watching the podcast, it looks like you invested a lot more money in this, but clearly you haven't. And so I explained that to him. So he knew that information, but then chose to present it in a different way when it suited him to try to get me terminated.
Okay, Scott Freitag, thanks so much for being forthcoming. And we hope that you have more success in the future.
I appreciate it, Scott. And I appreciate the opportunity to explain my side. Unfortunately, the union did a media push after my contract was terminated without cause that I was unaware of, and it hurt the Google search of my name and my hireability in other places. And so my side of the story needs to be heard, and I appreciate the opportunity to share it with you.
Well, there you have it. What do you think? You can read documents that support the other side's claims and make comments on our website at code3podcast.com/fired. Check it out. All right, that's it. That's all for this edition of Code 3. Thank you for listening. I'll be back next time with more. I'm Scott Orr, and until then, stay safe.
To contact us, get more information on today's show, or to subscribe to the podcast, go to code3podcast.com.